Would you all join me in a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer, please? Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. My name is Joe, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
Once again, very grateful to be here. We were last week on the title page, and let's go to the title page. We'll start there, and then we'll move on in. Once again, you know, in the past three sessions here, we've talked about kind of how our message came to be identified, or came to be identifiable. Two guys in the Oxford groups, you know, went to see Ebby. Ebby followed a program of action, went to see Bill. Bill accepted the same program of action to bring about that spiritual awakening, that spiritual experience. Bill went to see Bob and told him the same thing. Bill and Bob went to see AA number 3 and so on. And eventually they came somewhere in the late 1930s that the first 30 or 40 so AA members decided to begin writing a book. And by 1939, when there were around 100 of them or so, the book was actually published. I once heard somebody at a meeting say that this is not a storybook, but I've since come to believe differently. Our title page says this is a story, you know, of how these people have recovered from alcoholism, or how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. Now let's go over to the table of contents. We're going to flip back and forth between a couple pages here. Just want to show you something on the table of contents. Let's go into to chapter 5, I believe about page 60. Is that where the ABCs are? Yeah. Right in the middle of page 60, there's this paragraph here that says, "Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear these three pertinent ideas," and these three pertinent ideas, A and B, end up being step 1, and C ends up being the essence of step 2. But that little sentence just before the ABCs says, "Our description of the alcoholic." And you go back to the contents, the table of contents. We have chapter 2 entitled "There Is a Solution," and we have chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Now, chapter 2 is entitled "There Is a Solution," but it spends much time talking about the insanity that takes people like us back to drinking. And so chapters 2 and 3 together, along with the doctor's opinion, end up being our description of the alcoholic. And as we go through the book, we're going to see that. This is our description of the alcoholic on page 60, and then it says the chapter to the agnostic. And on the table of contents, we know that that's chapter 4. And then it says, "And our personal adventures before and after." And looking on the table of contents, we have Bill's story. At the bottom of the page, we have the overall title that says "Personal Stories." And so, going back to page 60, I'm going to read that with those other chapter titles and so on put in. And here's what we find in the middle of page 60. The doctor's opinion, chapters 2 and chapter 3, are our description of the alcoholic. So those chapters, plus the chapter to the agnostic, which is chapter 4, and our personal adventures before and after, Bill's story, and the rest of the stories in the back of the book. These things together are put in this book to make these three pertinent ideas clear. The one idea they want to make clear to us is that we, those of us who wrote this book, they are saying, we were alcoholic and we could not manage our own lives. They're kind of implying that we might have the same problem. These things together, they're saying, our experience has shown that no human power can relieve our alcoholism. And again, our experience has shown that God could and would, or God can and will, you know, for those who are willing to seek Him. And as we get in, and as we go through, and I think right in the forward to the first edition, you know, we're going to see some thoughts that are real consistent with that kind of thing. Let's flip to the preface of this book. It It's in Roman numeral 11, page XI. And I just must do this. Someone told me one time that they used V's, I's, and X's to number these early pages of this book, because you put V, I, and X together and you get VIX. And VIX is all about clearing your head up as to what this book is really about. And so it's here in these early pages that we're going to read some things about this book. And we're going to read some things about why the book was written, about how the AA message got started, and how AA itself got started. You know, some things are going to help us to put this book into perspective. I'll also tell you that, let me see here, this copy that I have is a third edition of the ninth printing in 1981. And I mention that because as we read through the preface and the forewords, I'm not sure where you're going to see some changes, but you're going to see some things you're going to read differently in some of these early pages here, the preface and the forewords, whatever. So if we're reading along and if your book says something totally different than mine in the preface or one of the forewords, and don't be too alarmed, and just for some reason they made some changes in some of these early pages. The idea that the first 164 pages never got changed is intact. So the fact that your forward to the second edition or third edition might read a little differently than mine does, that has nothing to do with the first 164 pages. And so in the preface it says, you know, this is the third edition of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. The first edition appeared in April of 1939, and in the following 16 years, more than 300,000 copies went into circulation. The second edition, published in 1955, reached a total of more than 1,150,000 copies. This next couple of sentences, it says, because this book has become the basic text for our society, and because this book has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery, meaning become recovered, there exists a sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. They're saying that this book has become the basic text for our society. The concept of a textbook, years ago I joined the Boy Scouts, and they gave me the Boy Scout handbook, and they told me in so many words, you go home and you read this book and you study it and you come back to the meetings and you do the things that we do, and, you know, here in the Boy Scouts, and by doing the things during the Boy Scout handbook, you're going to become a good Boy Scout, and you're going to get the benefits of whatever it is the Boy Scouts get from being Boy Scouts. And here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a book. And it's for the same kind of purpose. A few years ago, a certain judge thought that I needed a vacation at the Indiana State Farm. And I got to the Indiana State Farm, and they gave me the Indiana State Farm handbook. Anybody like to guess what rule number one is in the Indiana State Farm handbook? No homicide. That was rule number one at the Indiana State Farm. Don't kill anybody while you're here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, no homicide. And we get to Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a book, and it's a textbook. It's meant to be studied. We're meant to learn from this. We're meant to find out what it is that we have to do in order to recover. The sentiment against any radical changes being made in it because it works so well. This thing works. Let's don't change it. Therefore, reading on here, it says the first portion of this volume, the first 164 pages, describing the AA recovery program. We hear people talk about being in the program. No, the program is in this book. See, the first 164 pages describe the program. We're not in the program. If we're in anything, we're in the fellowship or the society that we call Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're members of our individual groups, you know, our respective groups. But the recovery program is in the first portion of this volume. And it has been left untouched in the course of revisions made for both the second and third editions. Reading on here, it says, the section called the doctor's opinion has been kept intact, just as it was originally written in 1939 by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, our society's great medical benefactor. The second edition added the appendices, the 12 traditions, the directions for getting in touch with AA, and then they go on and they talk about the stories. And here's one place that this older printing that I have will read quite differently than yours. Flipping a page, let's go to the last paragraph. It says, all changes made over the years in our basic text have had the same purpose, to represent the current membership of Alcoholics Anonymous more accurately, and thereby to reach more alcoholics. You know, the idea is that when AA first started, they were all pretty much low-bottom drunks. The people that were crawling up out of the gutter was about the best they could do. And some of the stories in the old, if you want to look at Bill's original manuscript, some of the stories that were in the original manuscript, you know, a lot of really low-bottom, hard, desperate cases. But over the years, you know, we found out that it is possible to raise the bottom to where it can hit other alcoholics. In the simple point, or in the simple sense that someone shared to me, alcoholism is like a long, slow train ride. It starts wherever it starts, and it ends at the end, permanent insanity or death. And the difference between the person who has to go right up to the point of death and the person who doesn't necessarily have to go that far, the difference can be made in whether or not we're able to help each other see that we're simply on that track. We don't have to go all the way to the end of the line if we can catch on to the idea. We can see some signs along the way and to begin to understand that even though I maybe didn't drink, see, I'm a nip at the ringer drinker compared to a lot of people that I know in Alcoholics Anonymous today. But by the grace of God, I didn't have to go to the end and to the lengths that other people did, because people were able to help me see, you know, where I was headed. So the idea here is that over the years, they've changed the stories in the back of the book to reflect the fact that younger people, women, early on in AA, they first thought about calling this book the Alcoholic Foundation, the 100 Men Corporation, or something like that. And by the time the book was published, I think there was at least one, you know, woman that was an AA member. Reading on here at the end of this preface on Roman numeral 12, if you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of the 44 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me, or, more important, yes, I felt like that, or, most important, yes, I believe this program, the program in this book, can work for me too. And so the idea of writing the book so people can identify with, yeah, that happened to me. Yeah, I felt like that. Oh, yeah, I think this will work. You know, however that conclusion is drawn. Right on the next page, the forward to the first edition. And here's where I'm going to make a little bit of reference to Bill's original manuscript as we get into this. The forward to the first edition, it says here, this is the forward as it appeared in the first printing of the first edition in 1939. And so, can you imagine in 1939, getting one of the first copies of this book ever printed, and you look on the title page, and I don't know if it said the same thing like our title page says now. Let's assume that it did. But let's flip the page in this first edition that we've ever, you know, first time we've ever seen, a very first printing of the first edition, and what's the first word that we see? We see the word we. The first thing we present in Alcoholics Anonymous is we. This idea of we, you know, we have a common problem, we know that. We have a common solution, we know that. We have recovered, we know that. But it's this we thing, it's this idea. The book doesn't start off with I, it starts off with we. That is the sponsor in Florida that actually helped me take the steps. He told me one time, he said, Joe, he said, this is a we program. Evidently he thought I had a little quote-unquote eye trouble at the time. Never have had a problem with that since, right? But evidently he thought I had a little bit of eye problem at the time, and he said, Joe, this is a program of we. He said, why don't you go to the book and see how many times the word we appears in there, and does it fit or doesn't it? The book says we did this, we did that, we do this, we do that, we have recovered, we whatever. He said, are you one of us or are you not? When the book says we something, does the shoe fit or does it not? If not, let's find out why. Because that big I was killing me. That ego and that idea that I was something special and something unique. And he knew that. And he told me, he said, you're going to have to get rid of that ego and get rid of that big I and get rid of some of that pride. I'd like to think I got rid of all of it, but that's just not true. And he said, you're going to have to get down to the point where you become part of this we thing. And they say here, they say, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered. The very first few words out of the book, that's who we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're men and women who have recovered from the hopelessness, or it says here, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, interestingly, those words are italicized for emphasis there. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, not approximately how we did it, precisely, to show someone else precisely how we did that, is the main purpose of this book. And to shed just a little bit of light on that, let me read those first two sentences from Bill's original manuscript. But in Bill's original manuscript, he said, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, exactly as it is now. Bill's second sentence read a little bit differently. Bill's original second sentence in his foreword said, to show other alcoholics precisely how they can recover is the main purpose of this book. So originally, Bill's idea was, we have recovered, and we're going to write this book to show other people precisely how they can recover. And we're going to show other people precisely how they can recover by showing them precisely how we recovered. The book was written for the other person. The book was not written so that we could say, look how wonderful we are, we're not drinking anymore. The book was written to tell other people, we've recovered. We want you to know that you can recover too. And reading on here, it says, for them, for these other alcoholics that we're trying to help, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. At the time this book was written, I would suppose that there were some people who thought it was just a little bit screwy. But after almost 3,000 years of virtually no hope for the alcoholic, all of a sudden there's about 100 of you people that say you've recovered, you've actually written a book about it. Oh, really? I mean, you can just imagine the skeptics. And whether those skeptics were alcoholics or whether they were not alcoholics really isn't the point. Most alcoholics had come to the place where we all thought we were doomed. There's no hope for us. And so they're saying, we hope that we've done such a good job of sharing our own experience that you won't need any outside authentication because you're going to have a hard time finding it. There just aren't many people willing to believe that there's hope for the alcoholic. And without getting off on this thing, I would just propose a question here. Is it really any different today? You know, today there's so many people say that alcoholics can never recover. And yet here we are, people with a message to carry. We have recovered. And to show other alcoholics precisely how we recovered so that they can recover too. And it was the purpose of this book. And may I propose the purpose of this meeting. I think in our traditions I read, it's kind of like the primary purpose of our groups. To carry the message, let people know that we have recovered and they can too. Reading on, they say, we think that this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. That's a controversial statement made back then. It's still controversial today. Some people think it's an illness, some don't. AA takes no position on that. It says, and besides, we are sure that our way of living, you know, has its advantages for all. So even for people who are not alcoholics, they're saying, hey, look, you know, we're going to describe a spiritual way of life that's really a pretty good thing. They say it's important that we remain anonymous because we are too few at present to handle the overwhelming number of personal appeals which may result from this publication. They put the word may in here, but they really believed they were going to be overwhelmed with calls, you know, for help once this book came out. And if you want to read some of the history of that in AA Comes of Age, they were a little surprised that it didn't take off quite as quickly and quite as well as they first hoped it would. But we would like it understood, reading here, it says, we would like it understood that our alcoholic work is an avocation. An avocation simply means this is not our vocation. This is not our profession. This is not what we do for income. This is something we do in our spare time. Most of us, or all of us, spend much of our spare time, you know, trying to help others. They say when reading on, when writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, we urge each of our fellowship to admit his personal name, designating himself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Very earnestly, we ask the press also to observe this request, for otherwise we should be greatly handicapped. It's like, we're kind of like asking the people, the press, the media, hey, do us a favor and don't publicize these alcoholics at the personal level, because some of them are going to want to do it anyway, you know what I mean? So we're kind of like asking the press to help us, you know, be an anonymous people. The bottom of the page here in the foreword of the first edition, it says, we are not an organization. And we can leave out that little clause that says in the conventional sense of the word. We'll put that clause in there. I'm not saying we should take it out. But we are not an organization in the conventional sense of the word. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. There's been some debate, some talk over the years about why the word honest was taken out of this sentence when our third tradition was written. You know, can an alcoholic ever be honest about anything? And people like to split hairs about that. As time goes on, we'll talk about some of that thing. They say here, we are not allied with any particular faith, sect, or denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful. Alcoholics Anonymous does not propose to line itself up with anybody else's ideas, with any other goals that anybody might have. Our only goal, if you will, our purpose, is to carry a message of hope. And the idea about not being allied with any particular faith, sect, or denomination, we're not trying to align ourselves with the Catholics or the Baptists or the Jews or the Greeks or the Protestants or whatever, whatever. We're not trying to align ourselves in any way. We're making use of spiritual principles. We're making use of a simple program of action that brings us into some kind of conscious contact with God. And to keep all that religious argument and keep all that religious confusion and stuff that goes on, you know, out of Alcoholics Anonymous, we simply avoid being allied with any particular faith, sect, denomination, whatever. Reading here, it says, we shall be interested to hear from those who are getting results from this book, particularly from those who have commenced work with other alcoholics. We should like to be helpful to such cases. Inquiry by scientific, medical, or religious societies, you know, will be welcome. And at the end of Bill's original foreword, they had another little sentence that said, this multi-lift volume will be sent upon receipt of $3.50. And the printed book will be mailed at no additional cost as soon as published. The little thing they were trying to do was, you know, get some money up to actually get to the publisher. They wanted to get the book out to other people. I think the thing that, right there at the top of Roman numeral 14, this idea of the only requirement being an honest desire to stop drinking, you know, no fees or dues whatsoever. The simple idea that we're trying to present here is that any time, you know, we come across someone or we find someone or meet someone who appears to have a problem with drinking, you know, if that person expresses any kind of desire to stop drinking, you know, we do our best, we make our best effort to freely offer to them what we have, showing them how we have recovered, you know, no dues or fees. And, you know, Bill said one time that he didn't think it was necessary for us to give books away to every alcoholic. If an alcoholic wants help, he ought to be willing to spend $3.50. And I know that some, our group here, you know, we buy books by the box and give them to people, because we want so bad for people to have that information and have an opportunity to it. But the point being is not so much whether we give books away or whether we don't. The issues are that the other person needs to know that what we're trying to offer them is given freely because we want to share it. And as we get into the book, even further on, there's one place where it talks about the prospector whose belt is drawn in over his last ounce of food and his pick strikes gold. And I can't quote it to you exactly, but something along the lines of this load that he has hit, you know, this pick struck gold and this treasure that he has found will continue to take care of him for the rest of his life. The idea being that he mine it for the rest of his life and insist on giving away the entire product. And it's on that premise that he'll reap limitless dividends. So the idea that we come here to get something for us to keep, no. We come here to get something to give away. We're not the kind of people that want to do that when we get here. But that's what the steps are for, to bring about that change. Let's go to page 129 here and look at this idea about this limitless load. Bottom of 128 actually is a good place to pick it up. We're talking about the guy who has had a stirring spiritual experience. He's been hurt and he's hopeless. He knows that he's going to die, this thing called alcoholism, and he's grabbed onto this idea of learning to live by spiritual principles. And at first it seems like maybe he's just going a little too far with the spiritual thing. And in our book it says the person who seemingly goes overboard at first with the spiritual stuff is much better off than the one who goes after the money and the job and taking care of, you know, things like that. Down here on the bottom of page 128, skip that first sentence, that's in context with the previous. But it says, many of us have experienced Dad's elation, and we have indulged in spiritual intoxication at first. And here's where they describe this situation. You know, like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over the last ounce of food, our pick struck gold. So in the face of this hopeless mess that we've been living in, all of a sudden we run into some people who have a solution and who are taking the time to share it with us. And it's like, wow, there really is hope. There really is something here that can take care of this alcoholism thing that I don't understand when I was brand new here, you know. Bottom of 128, it says, joy at our release from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. Father, or the alcoholic, feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. I don't want to spend time here picking that apart. We may do that somewhere down the road. But this idea of giving away the entire product, everything that we're given, we're to in turn give it away and live on to dividends. Now, that does not make logical sense. And I'm sure that all the financial advisors would tell you don't do it that way. But in the spiritual realm, that's the way it works. People say you got to give it away to keep it. That's right. It's in giving it away that we live on the dividends that come. I don't have to get something for me, keep some for myself, and give somebody else what's left over. No, everything that we learn, everything that we're given, we give it away. I'm not talking about material goods. Nobody has to get your wallet out here. But the idea of the things we learn in this spiritual way of life, we give it for somebody else. And I'll go back to Bill, that hotel lobby, and his own observation later that little could he realize what difference it was going to make, whether he went to the phone booth or to the bar. And the idea of having no idea if and or when he would ever help another alcoholic. Just that desire to pursue that desire to try to find somebody else, not only kept him going, but it turned into something that made it possible for us to all be here today. Let's go into some discussion about whatever's on somebody's mind, something maybe struck you here in the forward, or something about what we've read or talked about so far.
My name is Brian, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
Jumping back to the preface where the statement they made there says describing the AA recovery program has been left untouched, and you know that part is so needed not to be untouched or to be left untouched, because it's through the description of the alcoholic, the doctor's opinion, you know, and all those things that we need for each and every one of us as an alcoholic. We have to have those things to keep us from finding any loopholes that are going to wind up killing ourselves over. You know, every part of that. I mean, the doctor's opinion and every one of those things that comes up in that description of the alcoholic and all the stuff that comes after that. I mean, it's got to be there. It has to be there intact just the way it is now. Because, without it, we're smart people. We're not dumb. We're going to find a way of finding some loophole in that mess if it's not all in there intact. Because, we're going to wind up killing ourselves trying something that we think might work. That's where my mind was at. You know, I thought that it was somehow, some way I could figure this thing out. I didn't have to do it exactly the way it was in here, or didn't think that there was something that fit me. I was wrong. I knew when I got here that it made a whole lot of sense. And those people helped me to understand those things. It took every bit of that stuff that's there, just the way it's laid out. I mean, it's just not possible for... I mean, we're too smart people. We can find those loopholes. You know, that is just the way it is. I mean, it makes a whole lot of sense not to mess it up. You know.
Sure. But even if the book does get messed up, as you say,
right.
And I am one who believes that moving Dr. Pinion to the back is a real bad idea. Now, I don't know for sure that's the plan, but that's what I've heard, you know what I'm saying? And maybe it'll happen, maybe not. It isn't the point. But even if something like that does happen, even if this book gets cut apart, rearranged, whatever somebody might decide to do to it, all right? Those of us who have recovered still know the information that has to be presented.
Yeah.
With or without the doctor's opinion in the front of this book, we know that we have to drive home the hopeless feature of alcoholism. The world today doesn't want to acknowledge hopelessness. You understand? And we can, let's don't go off into that discussion. I mean, that's a good one. We may get into it later on. You know, so. The bottom line is, no matter what they do, I guess what I'm saying is, If we're dependent on the book,
yeah, I understand.
Then we got a problem. If we're looking to the book for the information we need to recover, now that we've got the information, with or without this book, we can still carry the message.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately, it's not dependent upon the book. I'm not speaking against what you're saying.
Right.
Because as soon as you start doing whatever, the alcoholic is going to look at it. He's going to start out. Can you imagine this? Chapter 2 is entitled, There is a Solution, but most of it is talking about the problem. And I believe the reason they title it, There is a Solution, is because you simply cannot present someone with the problem unless you've got the solution right there in the other hand, right beside it, so they can see there's a solution. You drive home the hopelessness of alcoholism with no solution in sight, the alcoholic's going to commit suicide or drink himself to death immediately.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like a little oxymoron kind of situation there that the chapter 2 got titled, There is a Solution, when it really does is drive home the problem, but it shows that there is a solution to that problem. Nonetheless, can you imagine if they start rearranging this book? They move the doctor's opinion someplace else, move Bill's story someplace else, some guy opens up the book, and says there is a solution. He's going to say, to what? What's the problem?
Yeah.
You know, where's the problem going to be described? That's like them people say Jesus is the answer. Okay, cool. What's the question? I mean, it's like we go around talking about the solution and the answer. It's that sharing, that one-on-one. And it's that thing of being able to share with the other guy that hopelessness. That's what that's about. Cindy, were you trying to talk here?
I just flipped to page 17. There is a solution.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad paragraph to start the book with if they're going to start moving it around. Not that I'm in favor of that either, but I've got recovered there highlighted and everything. No, I have. I just was thinking about what Brian was saying and what it says in this last paragraph in the preface about any changes being made to represent the current membership of Alcoholics Anonymous more accurately. You made the point earlier that the original membership were low bottom, gutter drunks, totally hopeless cases. That's not the case anymore for a lot of people who end up here. But if this is changed around and mucked around with too much, the initial information they're presented with, you know, how many more people are going to miss it and end up in that condition. You know, the current membership, the bottom's a lot higher than it was initially. But I don't think that doesn't change the truth of this thing one bit, because it's reaching more people. People don't have to be laying in the gutter, homeless, jobless, and eating out of a dumpster before they get here.
Even with that first paragraph there, you want to get down to men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. You're going to be wondering who the hell is Bill. You know, see, the first chapter in bringing home the hopelessness and stuff, you know, is the key point of chapter one. You know, you have to make sure that that person realizes the hopelessness of his malady. And then they start describing what alcoholism is. The person, before they ever even seek out the help, already knows something about that hopelessness. And for us to put it out there that, yeah, we understand this hopelessness. Now let's tell us why you, and, you know, let us help you understand why you became hopeless, and here's the solution to that. It's like I've heard talk about people wanting to take the word recovered out and everything else. You know, I look at it like this. If you take a recipe for a cake that called for 4 eggs, and you eliminate those eggs out of it, I don't think you're going to have cake anymore. It's the same idea with this. This has worked for these thousands of people. And if something works for people, why change it? You know, it's proven to be working for me, you know, right now. You know, I'm in a situation that I never thought I'd be able to handle before. And yet I'm still content, and I still have some kind of serenity in these cases. But, see, you know, a lot of things that I do now, 2 years ago, I would have been back out drinking, doing all the other stuff I would have done. But see, I was utterly hopeless when I came to these tables. And, you know, that hopelessness made me open to listen to what was being put forth to me. If I wasn't that hopeless, I never would have listened to anybody. I would have still thought, well, maybe I can do it myself. So that's why it's important to bring home the hopeless. Back on page XIV, that statement that Joe said about, you know, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. I don't know whether someone said something before that there might have been some other words put on that. But, you know, the idea nowadays in AA at large, people want to drop the honest and just say a desire to stop drinking, and they don't really clarify that either. You know, it, to them, you know, it's a desire to stop drinking. Well, I'll just stop for today. You know, and that don't work.
I think where that comes from, the confusion there, is that the idea, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. Honest is not meant to be a qualifier in the way that so many people look at it today. Let me see if I can explain that. If someone has an honest desire to stop drinking, and they run into a recovered alcoholic, or recovered alcoholic finds them, or however the two of them get together, and some 12-step work takes place, and that person is given an opportunity to recover on a spiritual basis and ends up drinking, the recovered alcoholic understands that. That's the natural thing for an alcoholic to do, is end up drinking. That's why we want to take the steps to bring about a change. We don't go back to drinking. Someone who doesn't understand that will be talking to the same person who has an honest desire to stop drinking. And that person will do everything he or she can do to try to stop drinking and end up drinking again And then the observer says, oh, they must not really have wanted to stop. Therefore, they didn't really have an honest desire to stop drinking. And since we can't tell whether or not they ever had an honest desire to stop drinking until we find out whether they stay sober or not, let's take honest out of there and just make this whole thing a big mess.
But all in part of self-will.
The honest desire to stop drinking is, the honest is really, like I said, just not a key issue there. The guy or the lady who has an honest desire to stop drinking is going to be willing to listen and is open-minded to conviction as only the dying can be. And at that particular point, they'll have the opportunity to honestly face their problem in the light of our experience if they want to. And if they want to, Appendix 2 says, most emphatically, we want to assure you that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his or her problems in light of our experience can recover. The willingness is there, the open-mindedness is there, and then the willingness and the open-mindedness not to be honest in the way that we usually think of it, but to honestly face our problems in the light of these people's experience. Now, what is our experience as recovered alcoholics? The ego had to be smashed. We had to turn to the sovereign God who created all things, including us.
Well, Chris, I'm an alcoholic.
Chris.
In my own experience, and I think a lot of people here have seen that, that the most radical change that's been made, not so much in the book, but in AA as a whole, was eliminating the book altogether, mm-hmm. and not because it's the book, but without that book, in here, in that forward of the first edition, you know, that we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics. And this is, we're trying to show these other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, is the main purpose of the book. So they're trying to carry this message, and it's just a matter of fact that it's in the book, but if people aren't using the message that's in the book, or don't even know what the book says, and they're just going by this idea of try this, it might work for you, you know, which has gone over for what I've seen for years, you know, going over, you know, that try this, it might work for you type of thing. Now, that almost killed me. The most radical change that I've seen was just taking the book away from the meeting without the book, or to know what they've done to recover, which was precisely what they were trying to do. Then you don't have that message in a meeting. And you look at step 12, you know, they're saying, and it's not because it's in the book, but they're trying to show us what they did. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, well, these steps are in the book. They're trying to show us, you know, those steps that they took to grow in that relationship with God, which was the only way to recover, or how they recovered. We tried to carry this message, and let's talk about the message that's in this book, and what they're showing us, what they did. And to practice these principles, which we learn, these spiritual principles, to practice these in all our affairs, which we learn from what they're trying to teach us. You know, one of the Bill ran into this last night, and it's one of the biggest arguments I've ever heard. You know, people take little pieces out of this book and use it against the message. You know, a guy hit Bill last night, you know, well, you must understand, he said, our book, and you look at page 164, our book is meant to be suggestive only. It's like, you know,
All that means is our book is meant to be suggested. If you have a problem with drinking, you want to do something about it, we suggest you do this.
Yeah. The sad thing is that people that would make that statement don't understand what this whole message is.
Sure.
You know, and I agree with you what you said earlier, that we can't focus on this because it's in the book or tout the book or idolize the book. It's the message that we're trying to carry, that we learn from what's in these pages. And to take that statement out, a book is meant to be suggestive only. Well, it goes on to say, we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Okay, then that takes us back to, okay, how do I get to that? Like you said, you know, Jesus says, like, yeah, how do I get there? You know, that when I came here, it was, if you would have told me that, the answer is a relationship with God. It's like, yeah, you know, how do you get there from here? You know, I'm lost. You know, puppy out here, I don't know what the hell is going on other than I'm dying.
See, it's like my first sponsor said to all of us, not just to me specifically, although I did take it personally, and I'm proposing it that way here to anybody generally speaking or personally. He said to all of us there, he said, you may be the only copy of our basic text that somebody ever sees.
That's right.
I do not propose that any of us should try to memorize our book. I have never once sat down to memorize anything in this book. Now, there are probably people here that are better than I am at finding page numbers. But the idea is that with or without knowing the page number, and even if I don't quote it exactly, by God, know what's in this book. So we don't have to become dependent upon the book to carry the message, is my point.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I may propose, that's part of the reason that we're having this series of meetings. And that's part of the reason we're taping them. So that down the road, people can understand to see the big picture. I probably use that expression too much, but to see the big picture and to see the principles and see the depth and the way, the message and the experience in this book, and to get there, to get past the surfacey stuff where it's, oh, top of page 20 says this and page 62 says that. Okay, cool. Why does page 20 say that? Why does page 62 say that? And what does that really mean? And what's that really coming down to? And in this big picture of man's relationship with God and with people around him and what has to happen so that we can recover and all that kind of stuff, you know, being able to see that. None of us here, I think, myself included, are ever going to see it perfectly or absolutely clearly at all times. But together, we keep each other reminded of the things that we do know. We keep each other motivated to keep digging. We hold each other accountable to a certain point. If I'm going to be a responsible group member, I better act like one. And if I'm not acting like a responsible group member, hopefully other people are acting like responsible group members and saying, hey, goof, you're not acting like a responsible group member. And that's holding someone accountable. Not in the sense that anybody has any authority here, because that'll get so twisted and misunderstood. You know?
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Tim.
Hey, Tim.
I know today that of myself, I am nothing. You know, without God, I couldn't have ever been able to do anything that I'm doing now. And it wasn't until that hopelessness was driven into me and the realization how powerless I was over everything. And no radical changes about this book, you know, if they do whatever, I'm not being the Henny Penny or whatever, the sky's falling person, but if they move the doctor's opinion around, right there in the beginning it says, the second paragraph where Silkworth was writing, it goes, in late 1934 I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. And then later on he says, scores of cases who were the type with whom other methods had failed completely. Clear on through up to chapter 2, it says how hopeless we really are without this program. And then even in chapter 2, you said something about chapter 2 being not the solution, but what the problem is. And the problem is we're hopeless. And I know I was. And so that, I wasn't willing until I found out how hopeless I really was. And I'm just...
Sure. And to be more specific, take that just another little bit further. The problem is so much that we're hopeless. The fact is that we're hopeless. The reason we're hopeless is that we're powerless. And so it's the hopelessness that leads us to face the facts and about our powerlessness. Page 45. We do not have the power by which we can live. That's what we got to find, the power by which we can live.
Yeah. And one thing, I've seen a lot of people showing other alcoholics, suffering alcoholics, hope when they haven't driven home the hopelessness yet. It's like that keep coming back, it'll get better type of stuff. And, you know, it's just pointless to show them hope until they realize, not so much that there is a solution, you know, that's all cool, but, you know, boy, it's, you know.
I'm Cindy, I'm still an alcoholic. Joe, I'll make this real quick. You said something last time you were speaking about how things work, you know, and that's the point. And then Tim was talking about the hopelessness, and that kind of ties in with what I was thinking when you were talking. here in the very first paragraph of the foreword, it says to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered. You know, it doesn't say to explain to them so they will understand all this stuff. And the only place in the steps that says anything about anything to be understood is in step 3, God as we understood him. And the point I'm trying to make, if someone realizes the hopelessness, the understanding of how all this works isn't going to matter that much. This is a pretty point-blank statement to show other alcoholics precisely how we did this. And then to move along to step 12, like Chris mentioned, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, see that you're hopeless. And this is how these people recovered. They did it by taking these steps. You take the steps, by the time you get to step 12, you'll understand, you know, a person will understand a lot more of this stuff. And what they don't understand, it comes along with time, and they see the results in other people. But that's the point I was trying to make. They did it to show exactly how they did it.
Let me throw this in here. Think about understanding. It is important that someone understand how this thing works. And why this thing works. Because in the world we live in today, there's no sense of right or wrong anymore. We live in an amoral, atheistic society. And where in the past, someone could safely take the steps without understanding all the little things behind them. We'll get into that more in the book, but those days are over. Because 60 years ago, when somebody said God, talked about God, we knew what they were talking about. God. Our book says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find it now. But today, when we talk about God, people got some idea of some cosmic plasma force or some goofy thing. So, yeah, the person can take these steps and follow the directions in the book and recover, whether they understand them or not. But if we don't understand what it is that we're trying to accomplish here, then we're not going to be able to help that person do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we've taken the steps, so have some understanding of it.
Our book says that those who seek God, he will reveal himself to them. Mm-hmm. And page 164 says, God will reveal more to you and to us, or to you.
God will constantly disclose more to you and to us.
Yeah.
Ask him in your morning meditation that you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come to you if your own house is in order. And then, like in my case, you know, how do I get my house in order? Came from recovered alcoholic, taking me through the steps. And that happens in the steps that your house is put into order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got, which a lot of people miss. And I think you got a hold of something. When it's just this opinion, or and this isn't opinion, and it goes on to say that, see that your relationship with him is right.